Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar, Root Cause Analysis and Systemic Corrective Action. My name is Shannon Craddock, and I'll be presenting today's webinar. The set of slides was originally presented in March 2021. So why this topic? Why are we doing this? We want to see your organization improve. There should be a strong correlation between how you do on your PJR certification body audit and your overall quality and delivery record with your customers. After all, the purpose of a management systems audit isn't to convince the auditor to write as few findings as possible. But where a finding is identified, we want you to take systemic corrective action for each and every cited issue. And once you're taking a corrective action and preventing recurrence of the issue in the future, that's when we'll start to see this strong correlation. Okay, to get things started, let's talk about the audit finding. An audit finding should have three distinct parts. First is the statement of nonconformity. Second is objective evidence to assist in understanding. And third is a clear citation of the requirement that isn't met. So if you see an audit finding that does not contain these three parts, first of all, they shouldn't be written by PJR auditors, nor should they be accepted by you. And I'm here to tell you, you're completely empowered to reject audit findings that do not contain these three parts in your closing meeting. From time to time, our auditors may write opportunities for improvement. These should exist only as statements or recommendations. There's going to be no citation of a requirement that isn't met, because if a requirement wasn't met, the auditor should have written a nonconformity, not an opportunity for improvement. Okay, so let's start breaking this apart into three constituent components. First, the statement of nonconformity. So a common issue we see here is that often the nonconformity recorded is not the problem, but it's a symptom of the problem. So we want to be sure to express the problem in terms of an issue with the system. If the problem is being expressed in terms of a person, an individual, or one specific incident, it's at the symptom stage, and we want to avoid this. And while I see a lot of internal auditors make this mistake, I occasionally will even see third-party auditors make this mistake, and that's very frustrating. The reason we want the statement of nonconformity written at the system level is that it's important to get to the true problem, the systemic issue, or problem-solving efforts won't be effective. Fixing symptoms is not going to stop the issue from recurring. So at this point in the presentation, I always try to demonstrate with an example that typically will resonate with a lot of people. I had my son out of school for 2 days this week because he was having some symptoms. He had a runny nose, was feverish, a sore throat, swollen glands, and I gave him some Tylenol to alleviate his symptoms. But when we finally were able to get into the doctor, we were diagnosed with a strep throat infection. And all the Tylenol in the world is not going to kill those strep throat bacteria. So fixing symptoms by taking Tylenol gave the poor little guy some relief, but it didn't stop or kill the strep throat bacteria causing the infection in the first place. Additionally, a well-written nonconformity should stand the test of time. You should be able to pull up from your electronic archives a nonconformity written years ago and understand exactly what the problem was. So let's look at two examples of poorly written nonconformities and talk about how we can make them better. So example number one, a poorly written finding. There was no training matrix for the first shift operator running job 9954 indicating competence to run that job. This is a perfect example that demonstrates confusion of objective evidence with the statement of nonconformity. This is expressed in terms of a specific person, a first shift operator. It's at the symptom level, not the systemic level. A better way to write this. The system, and we're actually using that word system in the nonconformity statement itself. The system for recording employee training and competence is not completely effective. Objective evidence. There was no training matrix for the first shift operator running job 9954, indicating competence to run that job. And then a clear citation of the requirement not being met. In this case, the 2015 version of 9001-72D. Note, we're taking that citation as far out as possible. We're not just saying 72 or section 7, 72D. So a better way to write this is the system for recording employee training and competence is not completely effective. We're focusing on the systemic issue. That word system is right in the nonconformity statement itself. And we're not focusing on the symptoms of the problem. We're not focusing on one specific incident. All right, example two. The quality auditor in the blue cell was using an uncontrolled form to record the results of first piece inspection. Again, this is expressed in terms of one particular person, one particular incident. It's at the symptom stage. Again, we're confusing objective evidence with the statement of nonconformity. A better way to write this, the document control system, there's that word again, system. Right in the statement is not completely effective. We've added objective evidence to assist in understanding. The quality auditor in the blue cell was using an uncontrolled form to record the results of the first piece inspection. And we're citing 9001, 2015, all the way out to 7531A, that suffix. So the document control system is not completely effective is a much better way to write up this incident. We're focusing on the systemic issue and not one specific person, one specific incident at a point in time. So in closing, as we wrap up the statement of nonconformity portion of today's webinar, when you review one written by your internal auditor, a PJR auditor, or even during a customer audit, ask yourself, are we distinguishing between the symptoms of the problem and the true problem? And does that final statement of nonconformity focus on a systemic issue? And also, are there sufficient data, objective evidence, and a very detailed citation of the requirement not being met to assist in understanding? Now, PJR has an internal advisory, it's our advisory three, that requires all auditors to document non-fulfillments of requirements as non-conformities. In fact, that advisory tells them it's absolutely inexcusable not to do so. There's no benefit to you allowing you to slap a band-aid on the problem or put a label on a bin of unlabeled product or update a training record really quickly. It doesn't benefit you. Those issues are just going to recur in the future. And these all contribute to the diminishment of the integrity of accredited management system certification. So it's our expectation that nonconformities written by PGR auditors need to be documented, as I have described, a statement of nonconformity, objective evidence, and a citation of the requirement not being met. Okay, let's move on to actions taken to correct, which are often called corrections or containment actions. This is actually a fairly straightforward concept, and most folks don't struggle with this. These are the actions that are taken with respect to the symptom or incident. They're incident-specific actions. And they're very important, and it's very critical to take them immediately to stop the symptoms from persisting. These actions typically take two forms. The first would be we calibrated the gauge, or we controlled the form. We updated the training record. We labeled the bin of non-conforming product with a red tag. Or adding a layer of inspection to catch any further occurrence. But keep in mind that adding a layer of inspection adds cost to a management system. It doesn't add value. And we're going to see that once we've determined the corrective action, we'll get to that in a little bit. Once we've determined and implemented the corrective action, then any costly added inspections should be removed from the system. You shouldn't need them any longer. So containment or corrections should be very specific. Examples might include the training matrix for the first shift operator running job 9954 was updated to reflect his competency to run the job unsupervised. Or all copies of the uncontrolled form the quality auditor in a blue cell was using were destroyed. So we're addressing the symptoms of the problem, what was seen by the auditor. However, corrections also need to include an extent analysis. Another word for an extent analysis is a look across. The auditor found one instance. So they saw the quality auditor in the blue cell using an uncontrolled form. Or the operator running job 9954, their training matrix wasn't updated. How many more like this are there? In other words, what's the depth and breadth of the problem? So again, the auditor may uncover one or more examples of a non-conforming situation. They may see one gauge out of calibration, one document that's uncontrolled, or a single training record that isn't updated. How many more are there? So a properly executed and well-written extent analysis would read like this. We verified the two gauges found by the PGR auditor, and they identify by number 2458 and 1354. Both were conforming. Our extent analysis included the 213 other gauges in our facility. So this tells us there's a total of 215 gauges in the entire plant. Only one, 5858, was found to be out of calibration. It was calibrated and returned to service. No product was measured with this gauge since it was last in a known state of calibration. This is a very well executed and well written extent analysis. We understand exactly the depth and breadth of the problem. It extended to two more gauges. In fact, this gauge was problematic, but luckily it wasn't used to measure outgoing product. When it was in the last known state, since it was in the last known state of calibration. Okay, we have modified our standard nonconformity report in the PGR audit template to include a blank for extent analysis. And while you aren't obligated to use our form, and you can use your own form, you want to make sure that you would include an extent analysis. And many client corrective action forms I see don't include a blank for extent analysis, so it's often forgotten. Okay, let's move on to root cause. By far, the most common pitfall with root cause analysis is that organizations will restate the incident and submit this as the root cause. This is not acceptable. So if we look at the two examples we've been following through this webinar, our organization failed to update the training matrix for the operator running job 9954. You're a genius. We've already told you this. You're simply restating and twisting the words. The quality auditor in the blue cell didn't use the correct form to record the results of first article inspection. Again, we've already told you they weren't using the right form. You haven't told us why in either of these examples. Another common pitfall is that sometimes the organization will restate a containment or correction for the root cause. And of course, this is also not acceptable. Okay, if you're checking your email or playing around on social media, I encourage you to tune back in. This is the single most important slide in today's webinar. A good root cause analysis answers the following question. What in the system failed such that the problem occurred? Again, what in the system failed such that the problem occurred? We're focusing on the system and not specific symptoms or one particular incident. Now, the possibility exists that some problems may have multiple root causes. Some problems may have several possible root causes. And if you can't narrow it down to just one root cause, all are going to require corrective action. Another really important point about root cause is you will know if you have the true root cause, if the problem can be turned on and off like a light switch. If the problem can't be turned on and off at will, then you may not have the true root cause. Now, before doing program management at PJR, I worked in management systems for a large tier one automotive supplier in North America. And I was responsible for all of their management systems. We had an issue at one particular plant in the Detroit area, where our operators were putting left-hand parts into right-hand pack-out boxes and right-hand parts into left-hand pack-out boxes. This was creating huge problems with our customer, General Motors, and we had a third-party sorting company at our facility and at the assembly plant. Big, big issues for us, all hands on deck. We convened a problem-solving team, and we determined that the illogical cell configuration, where the left-hand pack-out box wasn't on the left-hand side of the operator's body, and the right-hand pack-out box wasn't on the right-hand side of the operator's body, was the root cause. So we moved three manufacturing presses, thousands of dollars of cost. We moved the press in question and the press on either side to reconfigure the manufacturing cell. Now the left-hand packout box was on the left-hand side of the packout operator's body, and same for the right-hand packout box. But the operator was still putting right-hand parts into left-hand boxes and vice versa. It wasn't occurring as often, I'll give you that, but it was still happening. So we weren't able to turn the problem off like a light switch. So this told us we did not have the true root cause. More on this in a moment. There are a lot of different techniques for root cause analysis. This is not the fishbone diagram or Ishikawa technique. Today we're going to focus on the 5-Y technique. So with the Y technique, you're going to ask why over and over again until you've gotten to the true root cause of the issue. So let's do this for the two nonconformities we've been following throughout today's webinar. The first is the system for recording employee training and competence is not completely effective. There's our beautiful statement of nonconformity written at the system level. Objective evidence. There was no training matrix for the first shift operator running job 9954 indicating competence to run that job. So to get to the root cause, we begin asking why over and over again. Well, why was there no training matrix? Well, the first shift supervisor failed to update the training matrix as required by the first of the month. Well, why did they forget to do this? Well, before the end of the previous month, the HR manager would email the training matrix template to all of the department supervisors, but that didn't happen this particular month. Well, why didn't it happen? Well, the HR manager left the company before the end of the month, and her replacement didn't email the template to all supervisors. Well, why didn't this email happen? The procedure for training didn't include a requirement to prompt the new HR manager to email the template to all supervisors. So in this case, your problem-solving team felt that they discovered the root cause in 4 Ys. This could be okay. You want to make sure you have a good team in place doing the problem solving. Should not just be the management representative sitting in front of their computer 24 hours before the responses are due to PJR or to your customer. You want a multidisciplinary team that considers all perspectives, all viewpoints, and takes into account everyone's different knowledge and experience relative to the incident. Okay, let's take a look at our other example and ask why over and over again until we get to the root cause. The document control system, there's that word again, system is not completely effective. We see a quality auditor in a blue cell using an uncontrolled form for first piece inspection. Why were they using an uncontrolled form? Well, the controlled hard copies of the form had all been used in the blue cell. So the quality auditor resorted to an uncontrolled form. Well, why did they do that if the form was not controlled? Why would they use it? Well, the quality auditor in the blue cell was not aware that when no hard copies of a particular form were available, that the latest version of all forms could be accessed through the company's database. Why didn't they know this? Well, they weren't given a username and password to access the database. Why weren't they given a username and password? HR didn't have a policy to ensure all new hires are granted a system username and password. Okay, some things we won't accept for root cause. Oversight. We see this a lot. We misunderstood the requirement. I've actually been debating taking this out of the presentation because sometimes it is an appropriate root cause. Typically, if you're early in the stages of management system implementation. So maybe at your stage two, or if you're transitioning to a new version of the standard, it may make sense that you just didn't understand the requirement. But on surveillance audit 37, that is typically not acceptable. And some of my favorites, I forgot. Another ISO 9001 blunder. We had a client who had four or five findings, and that was the root cause on every one. Our consultant messed up, and human error. Okay, corrective actions. So we've already spent some time talking about corrections or containment actions. Corrective actions are different from corrections and containments. Those address the symptoms of the problem. Corrective actions address the root cause. They therefore should answer that very important question: what in the system failed such that the problem occurred? Sometimes organizations will repeat containments or corrections instead of corrective actions. This isn't acceptable. Not only should corrective actions address the system, but they should be irreversible. And they need to involve a change in the system. Retraining or training by itself is generally not a system change. Chances are when you implemented something, you trained to go along with that. Retraining isn't going to magically solve the problem. Incident-specific actions or corrections containments are also not irreversible. And in the automotive industry or any other industry that may use tools like a PFMEA, corrective actions should be reflected here. Take credit for your system changes in your FEMA and control plan. And they may require a new PPAP in the automotive industry. There should be at least one corrective action for each root cause that was identified. And subsequent data should show that the problem has 100% disappeared. So if we go back to the story I was telling about the automotive manufacturing plant where left-hand parts were put in right-hand boxes and vice versa. We reconfigured that manufacturing cell and adjusted the arrangement, left-hand pack-out box on the left-hand side of the operator's body, right-hand pack-out box on the right-hand side of the operator's body, and submitted that as our corrective action. But subsequent data failed to show that the problem had 100% disappeared. We knew we didn't have the true root cause in corrective action. So we reconvened our problem-solving team, and this time we added some members. And one of them, a third shift material handler, said, "You know, if it was impossible to put a left-hand part in a right-hand box and a right-hand part in a left-hand box, you would never mix parts." So we worked with a packaging engineer in our facility. We reconfigured the packaging by putting some dividers into the boxes and dividing the boxes into layers. And sure enough, with that new packaging material within the boxes, the problem had 100% disappeared. So we knew we had the true root cause. We managed to turn it off like a light switch. So let's go back to the two examples we've been following through in this webinar. The first nonconformity is that the system for recording employee training and competence is not completely effective. Corrective action is Section 4.6 of the procedure for training was updated to include a requirement for the HR manager to email a training matrix template to all supervisors for updating before the end of each month. The new HR manager was trained on this, and she added an automatic reminder to her Outlook to perform this task. Now, you'll note this is a permanent system change. We've changed a procedure. And while there is a training component, it's not the only part of the corrective action. So the question that we want to ask is, does this corrective action address the root cause? Well, let's toggle back to the root cause and see. The procedure for training didn't include a requirement to prompt the new HR manager to email the template to all supervisors. And now it does. The procedure for training has been updated. There's been training of the HR manager, and she added an automatic reminder to her Outlook to perform this task. All right, example number two, the document control system is not completely effective. The corrective action. The new hire work instruction was revised to include a requirement to grant new hires a username and password for the database as appropriate. All HR personnel were trained on this change. Again, there's a training component, but there's also a permanent system change, a revision to the new hire work instruction. The question we need to ask is, does this corrective action address the root cause? HR didn't have a policy to ensure all new hires are granted a system username and password. There's our root cause. And now the new hire work instruction was revised to include a requirement to grant new hires a username and password. And there's training. This corrective action does address the root cause. When training is part of the corrective action response, it's a good idea to include the technique that will be used to verify training effectiveness. Are you going to administer an exam after the training to make sure people really understand the points? It's always a good technique. Okay, let's move on to preventive actions. They're very different from corrective actions. They answer one of two questions. What other systems exist that might have the same root cause present? Or what systems could I have had in place that would have prevented this from happening? A common pitfall is that many corrective action reports will put corrective actions for preventive actions. And this is not appropriate because preventive actions address the future, not the past. So what could still happen, not what did happen. Because if there was actual occurrence of a nonconformity, we would need a corrective action, not a preventive action. Preventive actions address the system, not the incident. If there was an incident, if there was a specific problem or symptom occurring, we would need a corrective action. They, in fact, involve changing systems to prevent future problems. Preventive actions are not identified only because of nonconformities. In fact, many management system standards require preventive action as a proactive process with inputs from multiple sources, like near miss reports, 5S programs, employee suggestions, or other lean initiatives. So in other words, no nonconformity should never mean no preventive actions. You need to have other mechanisms in place to capture feedback, to capture suggestions, to prevent occurrence of future problems. Finally, let's conclude with verification. This is a very critical but often not performed step in the problem-solving process. In fact, I see a lot of corrective action forms from our clients that don't even have a spot to record the verification activities that were taken. So what do you need to look at in a sound verification activity? First, were containment actions or corrections taken? Did you calibrate the gauge? Did you control the uncontrolled form? Did you update the training records? And do you understand the depth and breadth of the problem? Have you done your extent analysis? Second, have you performed a proper root cause analysis? And you'll know you have the true root cause when you can turn the problem 100% off like a light switch. Have you implemented irreversible systemic corrective actions that meet or match the root cause? And remember, irreversible doesn't mean retraining. Chances are you've already trained. How is retraining going to suddenly make the problem go away? There's a permanent system change. And if you've implemented a permanent system change that addresses the root cause and turns the problem off like a light switch, any of those containment or corrections that are of the added costly layer of inspection, those can be removed if you've taken them. And that you've considered if there's any opportunities for preventive action resulting from this issue. As you go through your verification, keep in mind that corrective actions, while meant to be irreversible, might be reversible. And when you're making a change to a system, it means you're changing how work is performed. And unfortunately, change is difficult for a lot of people. Systems tend to return to where people feel comfortable. So if you conduct a verification activity 30 days after the nonconformity is first discovered, continue to verify this periodically, even after you get positive results on the first verification. In fact, some studies show that it can take 18 months for a change to become permanent. I'd like to acknowledge that some of today's slide content was provided by the IEOB, and I will now gladly field any questions that you may have. Please feel free to type them into the question field. Hi, Mr. Kimball. Yes, copies of the slides and a recording of today's webinar will be available for download at www.pjr.com. And folks, while you're there, be sure to check out our list of upcoming webinars. We've got a lot of great content coming up, 27001, R2V3, and some of the great kind of management system pillar training presented by Joe Krolikowski. Okay, Mr. Perlis is asking for an example of a corrective action versus a preventive action. So a corrective action obviously results from a nonconformity. So in the example of the automotive manufacturing facility where I used to work, we had a non-conforming situation, mixing left-hand parts and right-hand parts. Our corrective action was to reconfigure the final packaging. That's the corrective action. Now, in the future, when we're launching new products from dual cavity tools, we need to consider that the packaging so that we're not mixing left-hand parts and right-hand parts. So that would be an example of a preventive action. On future jobs, on future launches, looking for that. But remember, preventive actions don't always come from a non-conforming situation. Maybe I'm doing a 5S audit or a safety walkthrough, and I notice a particular situation that might lead to injury or might lead to a non-conforming situation, and I write up an employee suggestion to get that fixed. Another example of a preventive action. I hope that helps, Anthony. Wait a few minutes to see if there's other questions. Okay, so getting a question from Mr. Messerol about human factors regarding investigations. And I'm thinking that what you mean, Josh, and please feel free to type in clarification, is some of the aerospace standards introduce the concept of human factors, not necessarily a concept that's introduced in ISO 9001, but it's based on the idea that people can make errors no matter how well trained, how well disciplined or motivated they are. And sometimes even the most well-intended people are set up by the system to fail. And it's always an organization's challenge to develop error tolerant systems and prevent errors from occurring. So there's several different types of examples where things can be considered. The physical environment might be one, fatigue, distractions, mental workload, physical demands of the job, machine or tooling design, teamwork, process design. I hope that answers your question. I'm not really sure if I'm addressing it. Ms. Stitt, the site to download the slides is www.pjr.com. See if we get any more questions. A great question from Ms. Shears. What happens if management decides that the fix to the root cause is too expensive to implement? Sometimes some corrective actions are more expensive than others. So if a corrective action involves a capital expenditure, maybe a new software program, or maybe construction of a building annex because of overcrowding, that can be challenging. What management has to consider is if other less expensive corrective actions are going to be more cost effective in the long run. What if the problem repeats itself with some of these less expensive corrective actions? So I know it can be very challenging. And sometimes what organizations do is try the less costly corrective action first. We'll wait another moment or two to see if any other questions come in. Thanks for your questions this morning. They're all great. And again, everything can be downloaded from www.pgr.com within 48 hours. Be sure to tune into our website periodically for new content, new free webinars. Phil's making a point here, Mr. Parento. While I agree that a problem or symptom may have multiple contributing factors, I've always thought that for each, there's only one true root cause. If multiple root causes are identified, there's most likely a deeper cause that would encompass all of them. Do you agree with this? Or can you give an example of where multiple true root causes would exist? I don't necessarily think I agree with that. I think sometimes there can be a technical root cause to a problem and a detection root cause to a problem. So a failure, a technical failure perhaps, and also the lack of a detection control to identify the problem. I find that quite often, Phil. I was just informed that my mic might have been cutting out. So if anything needs to be repeated, please just type it into the question feature if any of the responses to the questions were not clear. Phil's commenting, wouldn't a technical failure also be a symptom? Potentially, I don't necessarily think that's the case every time, Phil. I've worked on several problem-solving teams for PJR, and often we identify both the technical and detection root cause. Okay, it didn't appear that any additional questions are coming in. I know your time is very valuable, so I won't keep you for the full hour. Appreciate everybody attending today, and we sincerely hope you found today's content helpful. Have a great one.